It's time for ESPN Las Vegas legal insider Justin Watkins with Battleborn Injury Lawyers, only on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Back here, 4 o'clock hour. You can watch the show. In about 5 minutes, we'll go live up on Twitter and Facebook. Want to remind everyone, big Nevada Day Festival coming up with UNLV women's basketball. Games, photo opportunities around the Mountain West Conference Championship Trophy from a year ago with Lindy LaRock's team. 11 a.m. on Friday, October 25th. Apparel, free food provided to the first 250 fans, and then they're going to have an open practice 12:30 inside the Cox Pavilion. Fans can watch practice and then get autographs from the players. A lot of new players from the playing time standpoint, because they bring back a lot of sophomores, and they do have some pretty good vets, but it'll be the first time, and it feels like in 20 years, that Desiree Young is not on the roster. And then they open the season on October 29th. That's a Tuesday. Exhibition contest against Point Loma. And November 4th is the opener against Loyola Marymount. Tickets, season tickets start at $75. Season tickets, UNLVtickets.com. So Nye's here. Justin's here. We're going to get into a lot of college sports in a couple of minutes, but you're also, wow, the shirt and hat. Well, are these new?
You'll love this. This shirt is new.
It is new. Oh, is that a clearance rack?
Yeah, clearance. $3.50 for this shirt.
Stanley Cup.
Stanley Cup champion.
Where'd you get it?
23 Fanatics. They had a whole sale, like 70 to 80% off after Florida won, and they came out with the new apparel. Then they marked down everything. So I bought a
whole, great, right?
Yeah, I bought a hoodies. I bought hats. I bought the whole thing. I outfitted the whole family across the board, and it was like $80. It was great.
I've done the same too, but before,
is that where you got that Dodger?
That Dodger, that I see the folds in that
thing.
We're
gonna talk about this. Yeah. Because we brought it up at the beginning
zip, of the quarter zip, whatever it's called. I guess the three-quarter zip will have you hanging out.
You guys can hang it if you want to.
Yeah, the bright white, never been worn, still off the hanger.
I take care of my stuff. Yeah, just because I'm not an avid watcher like you doesn't mean I can't rep.
Yes.
I will defend Nye in this case. I think this is more of a family Dodger.
It is. Exactly. And I've explained that to him.
No, that's not acceptable.
Twice.
That's not acceptable.
Yes, it is.
You grew up here. You know, you don't have to follow the family dynamics just because. And then you don't wait until the playoffs start wrapping some Dodgers.
No, that's a lie. I have a picture. Actually, Steven, I have a picture on the ESPN Las Vegas Instagram of me wearing a Dodgers tank top. I wear I still wear Dodgers apparel.
Last playoffs?
No, this year. I still, even though I don't follow it, I still wear Dodgers apparel because it is a family's team. Now, my mom is an A's fan and my dad is a Dodgers fan. So really, I rep both.
So you should be the Padres fan, the best place in America to watch a baseball game.
We're not
the
from
most
San
exciting.
Diego. You usually pick the team that's closest to where you live.
You're from Vegas.
Vegas is not a culture where baseball is big, because hopefully now, the A's stadium works out the way that we expect it to. They'll be here in Las Vegas. But when you don't grow up in a state where baseball is not praised as much as everything else, then you can pick which team you want. I'm not going to be Vegas to San Diego. I'm going Vegas to LA.
All right.
Now what?
But I'm just going to say, I'm going to take umbrage with the idea that Vegas is not a baseball town and somehow the A's coming here is going to change that. I think Vegas is a baseball town. I mean, growing up here, as a kid, when I'm quite a bit older than you, we had two heroes. Well, we had the 1990 Rebels and Rebels basketball, of course, but we had two heroes as Vegas natives, and that was Andre Agassi and Greg Maddux. And now the kids that grew up in Vegas have a whole host of Vegas connected pro Major League Baseball players who have obtained an immense amount of success. So if you get involved in Little League here and baseball here, baseball is big in Vegas. It is big.
Okay,
it's not going to be any bigger because of any potential relocation.
I feel like it will be, though.
Not in
my personal opinion. And granted, I don't think the A's is a greatly run organization. That's something that Steve and I discuss all of the time.
Yep.
But think about it. Who were really hockey fans until the Golden Knights came here?
Yeah, there's a major difference there. The Golden Knights from day one tried to win and did win. And the A's from day one will not try to win and will not win. And so when you go to that stadium, if it ever gets built, you go to that stadium, it's going to be way more than 50% other fans, way more than 50%. And what Vegas person who's got pride in Vegas is going to want to go to a stadium to watch themselves get out cheered by a different team's fan base and then get smoked? Like, I've been here long enough. Vegas does not support losers. They don't.
Nope.
They don't. And okay. And unless the A's drastically change how they go about running their business, I don't see, I certainly don't see 20 years of straight sellouts like they've predicted.
No.
No.
Definitely and look not. At, I mean.
But I will want to support. I mean, not if obviously the organization frustrates me, period, because I hate terrible ownership, especially when the owner is dirt rich and has the ability to do things and change things in an organization, and that's not done. I have a different perception, but I am from Vegas. So if they do come, you know, if that is actually going to be planted, I will support.
It can be cool jumping on the ground level. The problem is, are they motivated to get off the ground level? Like, if you think they're going to win, you know, 4 years after they're here. By the way, they have enough good prospects, and now they should be flush with more money, because I still don't believe they're going to put up the money for the stadium. They should be winning when they get here.
Yeah.
If there's anyone in the A's organization who's like, oh, we're good, we'll just, you know, it'll be a honeymoon period for 2 years. 5 years from now? 6 years from now you're going to compete? They already showed signs in the second half that they should at least be a 500 team next year. They need to augment and add some more players and build around. Now, they don't have – the thing is, they don't have, like, 22-year-old AAA guys they brought up. They're all 26 to 29. But so what? Those are building blocks. Spend a little extra money and, you know, try to be at least 500 by the time you get here. You can't be a 50-win franchise 4 years from now.
Well, yeah. I mean, I agree with everything you said. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the A's franchise itself. The history of the A's is great. They got a lot to build on. You know, growing up as a kid here and there not being any baseball team that, you know, owned this market, there were, you know, when the Bash Brothers were around, there were plenty of A's fans around here. You'd see A's gear around here all the time. It was mostly an A's Dodgers kind of town. You didn't see too much Padres, and you'd see some Giants. But really, I'm talking, you know, mid to late 80s and early 90s, this was an A's Dodgers town. And so I agree with everything you said. I'm just saying
I'm being pie in the sky.
Yeah.
I know what's going to happen. Yeah, I'm trying to be optimistic, trying to turn over a new leaf in the offseason, but it's hard.
The evidence of this guy and how he runs organizations, he gets a new MLS stadium and does not invest any more money, and they suck. You know, there's no reason. We have nothing in the past to believe that John Fisher is going to take anything that he gets out of this relocation and financing and stadium and put it back in the team rather than back in his pocket. And I also don't think he's filthy rich, you know. By all accounts, it looks like financing is an issue because he's not filthy rich. And you know, I know they came out with this report that you know, the convention authority and stadium authority has seen his, you know, quote unquote balance sheet, and they're confident that he can do the financing based on a balance sheet.
Boy, that when I saw that, I was like, come on. What? By the way, why even announce that?
I don't know.
That to me, like, I get cynical on that. I'm like, wait a second. Is there something wrong here?
Right.
Who was really asking? Is there a groundswell in Las Vegas of people who are like, we need to see the money and the proof? Like, just get to the finish line. And then when you don't get there, explain why you didn't get there and move along.
Yeah, and if you're going to do it, don't come out and say, we looked at the balance sheet.
Yeah.
Because anybody who has any sort of accounting background is like, the balance sheet's irrelevant. That has nothing to do with his liquidity and his ability to finance anything. That doesn't mean anything. All of the stuff on a balance sheet could be leveraged. We don't know. We have no idea what that means. And I mean, now we do have a full audit that's going to come out, which they said they're going to share with the public. So mark that down. By the end of the month, we don't see this full audit come out, that's going to tell you something, that it wasn't good, right? So we get actual accounting firms to do an independent audit and come back to us and show us, okay, now I'll start believing. You know, I think Steve Hill has done some really great things in his roles in our various different governments here, but his background is not accounting. Okay. His background is in engineering and manufacturing and business development. Okay. So him looking at a balance sheet means nothing to me. And that's nothing against Steve Hill. Like I said, I think he's done an excellent job in the roles that he's played, but that quote, it doesn't mean anything to me. You know, I want to see it. Mm-hmm. Show me the audit. Let's show me the plan, not concepts of a plan, the plan, how we're going to get this thing financed, when it's going to actually start being built, what's going to be around there, when, and really the other part of the plan I want to see is how are you going to develop the fan base in Las Vegas while you're playing in Sacramento for the next 4 years?
Are we just going to be ignored for two plus years? And right. Maybe the last year they start doing stuff?
Probably. I don't know. We have been to this point. What can happen in 4 years? You know, you hang out in Sacramento. You've got a friend and an owner of the Kings who really wants them to be in Sacramento.
He's got money.
He's got real money. Way more money.
Real money.
You know?
Much needed money.
And he's a good owner. Yeah. He runs organizations well. A lot can happen in 4 years. So I'm still pessimistic about how this is all going to play out. You know, it's funny. I was at a gala 2 weeks ago, and this young man was being honored who's a friend of the family. And so we went, and he's 14 years old, and he's a huge baseball fan. And he plays baseball. He's a Cubs fan because of the family. Grew up as a Cubs fan. And they're like, oh, what do you think about the A's coming to Vegas? And he's like, I'll be in college by the time they get here, so I don't really care.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, you start putting timetables that's crazy.
We got teenagers who are all sour on the A's already. Okay.
What do you think about, like, okay, obviously it was a plan for them to come to Las Vegas, a place where you can come and truly run a very successful organization because there's so much to capitalize off of. Do you think, I mean, obviously we question the finances that take place in that organization, but do you not think that Las Vegas is a place where you can build that and capitalize off of it because of all the traffic now coming in, because the Raiders, you have the Golden Knights, people may want to stop by and watch a baseball game if that even ever does happen.
Yeah. I mean, certainly the history has shown that relocation to Las Vegas increases the value of a franchise, increases ticket revenue. Like we have enough evidence of that to show that that is true. The fact that the Raiders are still some of the most expensive tickets in the NFL proves that. You know, I feel bad for Raiders fans, like the Las Vegans who jumped on board with that organization. Woo, it's tough. It's tough.
You're really wiping on me all day today. What is this, dude?
I'm saying I have pity on them. I mean, I do. I have pity. It's tough. It's tough to be. It's going to be tough to be a Raiders fan for a while because it's not a well-run organization. You know, and there's no reason to think that they're going to make the next right decision. I mean, Steve asked me a year ago, like, okay, they've hired Antonio Pierce. You know, what do you think about that? And I was like, it's the most Raiders move that you can make. It's
not a compliment. Not a compliment.
No, it's Raiders doing the Raiders thing, you know, and keeping.
Hey, the players want Antonio Pierce. Yeah. 4 weeks into the season. Davante Adams. You know what? I don't like this guy.
Yeah.
Wait. Mark Davis must be like, you guys wanted him. Now you're done?
I have pity on Raiders fans, man. Pity on Raiders fans.
Real weird deal. This hour is brought to you by Battleborn Injury Alert. 766-1400 is the call from anywhere in the state of Nevada number. Got it out 775 in the north. Remember, our offices in Reno, in Summerlin, downtown Vegas, and Henderson.
Live from the Battleborn Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company. On ESPN, Las Vegas, and ESPN, Reno.
All right, rolling on. Cofield & Company. Battleborn Injury Lawyers. Justin Watkins. And I would love to have that conversation you guys are having about Davante, but... No. We got to put it off for another day.
Yeah.
I was going round and round with no direction. Raiders fan against not so much a Raiders fan.
From an objective observer.
Possibly.
That's all you are, is an observer.
Yeah, I don't care.
You haven't been sitting in the front seat like we have been as Raider fans.
Yeah, that's why you guys can't see it clearly. Sorry, go ahead.
Wait, am I seeing this clearly with... So college football looks like they're floating a new plan. It is... As we were calling the Big 80, a big plan to have the four power four that exists right now, and then that would add up to 68 schools, but limited at 70 instead of 80, which, boy, isn't that convenient. Because we were talking about a relegation system that a Boise State executive came up with where there'd be relegation from 71 to 80 and then maybe down 80 to 90. Those teams would have a chance to move up. Right now, it looks like with 68, you think the other two are going to be the former Power 5 members, Oregon State and Wazoo, and it just shuts out everyone else who's been playing around with this Mountain West Pac-12 thing.
I mean, according to the plan, they showed the teams on the map, and it was Oregon State and Washington State. It literally was bringing the old Pac-12 back together. It literally was a Texas and Oklahoma, I'll call it conference. They didn't do it that way. They're just talking about regionality for scheduling. Right. They didn't. There's not sub-conferences. There's just regionality. Texas and Oklahoma are together. You know, basically the SEC is together. You know, the Big Ten, and then the Big Ten sort of, I'll say, split between the Eastern and the Midwest. So early signs are of that. I also thought it was very interesting, and I don't know that many people caught this, but when the settlement, the NCAA settlement came out with the preliminary approval this week, with the judge saying, okay, I preliminary approve this. There's going to be an opportunity for people to object and have some feedback, and then we'll determine this formally on, I think it's April 7th. And part of that resolution is paying athletes. It's bringing NIL in-house. It's some transfer restrictions. It's providing guardrails for this Wild West system. That's what the whole settlement is, inclusive of paying $2.8 billion to former athletes and athletes. All of that's part of it. When the conferences made statements about it and implementation of it, there was a joint statement from the Big Ten, the SEC, the ACC, the Big 12, and the Pac-12. They did a joint statement together. Now, they may just do the joint statement because in that litigation, they were still the Power Five. That might just be why.
Right.
Or it may be that they are all still sort of talking together in that realm. I think it's, you know, you'll see a lot of online chatter talking about, you know, no, Pac-12's not a Power Five. You know, they're not going to get the autonomous bid into the college football playoff. Those are two separate things. The autonomous power, now four, it is Power Four. They took away the power status of the Pac-12 when they reduced down below eight, with a door open to get it back. That has to do with the financing, where the money goes for the college football playoff. It also gives a power conference has veto power over certain changes that are made to the structure of the college football playoff and the system and the bowl system, but it is not an autonomous bid in the conference or in the college football playoff itself. The way that's structured is the top five conference champions automatically get in, and then the rest of the seven are at large. Now, everybody always assumes those top five conference champions are going to be ACC, SEC, Big Ten, Big 12. But that might not be the case. It could not be the case this year.
Right.
Right? Like, an ACC champion might be a three loss. Big 12?
Big 12 for sure.
It could be three or four loss.
It could be lower in the rankings.
It could be lower in the rankings than Boise State.
Than a group of five champion.
Boise State.
Or UNLV. Or Liberty. Or Liberty. Or Army.
Or both.
By the way.
Yeah.
Army, Navy.
Yep.
Make it all the way to the end.
Yep.
And they somehow get shut out of this. One of them goes unbeaten.
They won't get shut out, though. I think they'll be in the top 12. They won't get an autonomous. Like, no, you could already see what's happening with these rankings.
Yeah.
You could already see.
You think they're already rigging them?
100% they're rigging them.
Like, they won't move Boise up quickly enough, or they certainly weren't real welcoming about UNLV.
No.
By the way, UNLV went from being in the top 25, losing an overtime game at home,
yep,
to not getting a vote.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
What?
You got Boise State losing by three to who you think is the third best team in the country.
Yeah.
On the road.
With the Heisman Trophy winner on the team.
Yeah, exactly. And they're at 15. You got Alabama losing to a team that is never going to be in the rankings. And they move from 1 to 7. And so you could see the reluctance to let any of the Power Four slip in the rankings, mm-hmm. and the reluctance to ascend anybody who's not in the Power Four. You just, it's a fact. I don't even think this is opinion. There is reluctance mm-hmm. there to do that. So I don't think, let's say Liberty, Army, and Boise State go undefeated. Or UNLV. Boise State, UNLV, either way. Finish with one loss. There's no way all three of those will be ahead of even, I'm going to say, a four-loss Big 12 champion. They will not. They're not going to let it happen.
So we're talking about this reorganization that's coming. And while we were going through that whole Big 12, check that, Pac-12, Mountain West thing, I was like, what are we doing here? Like, they're reorganizing out West for basically no change in the future because they're just going to make it exclusive. Yeah. I thought 80. Now they're going to be at 70. By the way, can we just have one person in the state? I'm going to go back to the well on this. A politician become the sports politician, the sports public servant, because the way this could work out 5 years from now is these other conferences all group up and they all pick the traditional schools. And then the you know, very recent, by the way, how is Houston, Central Florida, Cincy, and BYU? They're in because they just got in. Uh-huh. They're in the class. But what you could have is, I think if I'm counting correctly, you'd have about 7 states that have no shot because of a monopoly at a piece of the mega pie with the Big 70. I think only 3, because I'm also including like Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont.
Yep.
They don't have any Division I programs. Right. But New Mexico, Nevada, and Idaho would be shut out. Dakotas don't have a Division I.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
an FBS.
Yeah. Yes.
So I think I'm correct. Yeah, I think there'd be 3 states
yes.
that have FBS, and they're going to be arbitrarily shut out for a piece of the pie. There's got to be lawsuits, and like now. Like, right. Start banging the gavel and going, this can't be. Why is this happening? Why are we having in the state of Nevada to fund 2 schools with no chance? By the way, you're also going to open the door for like 4 years and go, that system is done.
Yeah.
Now, little guys, you can't come in. So New Mexico, Nevada, Boise, we're going to just arbitrarily say, you guys are in Division II. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing I'll say about that. In order for you to have I think there's plenty of politicians in this state that think they are the sports politicians and why we are now the sports mecca of the world. Well,
they ain't college.
Yeah, I know.
They're not local college football.
Right. I agree. But here's the thing. Until the fans start showing up and showing out and demanding it, there's no pressure. I mean, there's no pressure on them when there's 21,000 people in a stadium. Now, the Syracuse game had more, but it was orange. It was not red. Okay.
I didn't see a lot of people when we were all patting ourselves on the back for a big turnout of 31,000. 8,000 were Syracuse fans. Basically, it was about the same crowd they've had
exactly.
at the other home games. And the other one, I showed you, I know you had sent over, I found the link on what did Oregon State CW against Colorado State draw?
600,000.
That drew 600.
Yeah.
Rebels and Syracuse on TV on that Friday night.
By themselves. Right?
No, they weren't. They were against Oregon, Michigan State, which got 2.5 million.
Yeah, that's true. That's
still right. Couldn't get the 700,000 viewers. Now, that's not terrible.
Right? But they were on a major network.
CBS Sports Network.
Yeah.
Versus the CW.
CW at 3:30 against, you know, 8 other games. The CW.
You're right.
We were at 3:30 against
Friday versus Saturday.
Against all the major networks. Yeah. All, you know, linear networks all had games on. All the extended cable networks had games on at that same time. But here's the other thing. In addition to, they need fans to show up and show out and show support of this and demand action. The other thing is, got to invest. I mean, their spending on athletics at UNLV and UNR are 1/4 of what Oregon State and Washington State spend. So you can't ask for a seat at the table of the big boys and not spend and show that you're trying to spend there, because that could just be the divider, right? I mean, that to avoid all lawsuits, you just say, hey, unless your athletic budget is above 80 million, you're not in, because you're not serious about this, right? We have to have people who are serious to make this work, because we are going to be paying players. We're going to be, you know, there's going to be NIL deals. There's going to be corporate sponsorships. And if you're not investing in it, then you're just getting, you're just dead weight. You're pulling us all down.
I got a minute left before this break. All right. So does that open the possibility that, hey, you've got some time, you got to up your athletic budget.
Yes.
And that you could have group of fives, surpass, I'll call them bottom feeders in the Power Four.
I would certainly hope so. When you look at the stadium at Houston, when you look at SMU Stadium and there's 12,000 people there, yeah, they got into the Big 12 because the Big 12 was worried about its existence, not because they deserve to be there. I mean, SMU bought their way into ACC, yeah. But they don't have that fan support. They just got lucky, no doubt about it. They just got lucky. If the Big 12 could do it all over again, they would not take UCF. Well, maybe UCF, but not Houston. So, yeah, I think there's opportunities.
Okay, so this could be a freaking intense war. I do want to see politicians get involved. I think enough is enough. I don't understand the arbitrary nature of this. And then very recent additions are going to be part of the party. And then Nevada's not going to be in. UNLV is not going to be in. I mean, that's – someone's got to step up. This is costing us money.
Live from the Battleborn Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Justin Watkins here as we are at the Battleborn Broadcast Center. 766-1400 is a call from anywhere in the state of Nevada for Battleborn injury lawyers. Hi, Zaragoza is up with Cofield and Justin. Little WNBA here, and then we'll get to some gambling talk. You had a question about Juju Watkins versus the current stars or current young stars in the WNBA?
Yeah. 19-year-old Juju Watkins extends multi-million dollar contract with Nike, which is insane. So I posed the question. I'll pose it to you, Justin. Do you think Juju Watkins has the potential to be a bigger upcoming than Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese?
No, I don't. Just because I think there are a lot of factors that go into this. And I think the difference with Caitlin Clark is she has that Steph Curry sort of game to her. She's throwing the logo threes. I mean, that's what got, you know, it's social media showing, you know, this basketball player hitting these long range threes. That's how I first heard of her. Not that Juju Watkins isn't heard of. She is, like, they know, but her game exists in the WNBA already. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we've now proven that Caitlin Clark's game did not exist in the WNBA. I mean, the number of threes, the number of assists, the ways in which she was getting these assists was new. I think Watkins will be, you know, unrelated, will be a star. She'll be a good player in the WNBA, but we're talking about whether or not she has the box office appeal. I don't think so.
There's a skill level thing.
Yep.
Then there's a racial angle. Mm-hmm. If Juju wants to start mother blanking Caitlin Clark all next year before she goes to the NBA, and she's like, I am going to wreck her when I get there. I'm the best prospect. And like, it's going to have to be like a wrestling thing. Yeah. Cause that's sort of what Angel Reese
did.
It's like a wrestling work.
Yeah.
And that doesn't just happen organically.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, I guess the other thing would be maybe Juju Watkins is like 42 points a game this year. Maybe she's so friggin' awesome and they win the national title that she can capitalize on the momentum the other two young ladies have brought to the WNBA. But it's hard. These are like comets. It's just very unique. And it's a weird environment right now. Yeah. Social media, you got, you know, African-American, white chick. I'm not saying, like you just said, like, hey, no relation, Watkins. Just hearing and seeing enough whites up on social media, there's been a thing with white basketball fans, and you saw it really emerge back with Larry Bird.
Yeah.
There's just like, there's a jealousy.
Yeah.
I don't know why it doesn't exist. Like, I don't know why whites aren't mad at Latinos, because they've in many ways taken over the game, mm-hmm. right, of Major League Baseball. Just different.
It's very different.
The Midwesterners, and I guess it was a political thing as well, although I don't think she aligns with them politically, but it was like this perfect storm of negativity in a lot of ways on both sides. And there are sides.
And it stems from something that's been going on forever, though, right? And people made that specific situation, like we've talked about before, about race. But it goes back in the past with the slavery days, why it's that difference between the blacks and the whites, right? Because you gave the comparison. It's not like that with Latin. Like, it was definitely mm-hmm. like that with black people and
can
white
I,
people.
Can I tell you one that I thought of the other day? We have not talked about, and I probably won't because I don't have a lot of good things to say, and I don't want to stomp on someone's grave. I was watching the Pete Rose documentary back. I hadn't watched it. It came out like 2 months ago. Pete passes away. But just like listening to the fans of the 70s and like with like, you know, gritty, gutty Pete, the way he played, you know, head first slides and he's fighting people. Yeah. That could be me. Like it can't. Right. But there's a connection for people.
Oh, well, always. Right. I mean, there's always going to be some connection that aligns with race because you see yourself in somebody a little bit more if they are the same race as you. Whether you acknowledge it or not, I think that's real. There's always going to be some component of that. You know, to act like that doesn't happen, I think it's just a fallacy. But I think the addition of Caitlin Clark is, I agree with you, Juju Watkins got to win the national championship, score 40 points a game, and then she can ride some momentum in.
It's Cofield and Company's Eye on Sports Gambling, presented by Oasis Bar and Grill. Only on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Nice here, Justin Watkins, Battleborn Broadcast Center. Last couple minutes with Justin. And if you've got legal questions, see if we can squeeze in a legal question on the show. But if you've got issues, certainly give him a call at 766-1400. That's a call from anywhere in the state of Nevada. Number, to tie up some loose ends, man, I pretty much nailed it with that bet on the WNBA and the Aces and Liberty audience on average per game. Last year for the finals, they averaged 838,000 per game. We saw Caitlin Clark consistently go over 1 million viewers during the regular season with, you know, high points of like 2.5 million. She had a 1.8 million game in the playoffs. And my thought was the Liberty and the Aces, though they're glamour teams, are not Caitlin Clark. And they might get half the audience that Caitlin Clark did. So I set the number over under average per game in this last series at 975,000, and it finished at 968,000, and a couple of the games went over, but not one game had an audience over 1 million. Yeah. It's amazing how condensed it was between 938,000 and I think 990.
I mean, I think, you know, when you and Willie and I were talking those numbers, I think if we're going Price is Right rules, I won. You guys all went over, and I came That's in way point. Low at 700,000. I did a dollar. I bet I.
Well, you didn't know you didn't know the numbers, so you lucked out. They weren't going to go down.
I think I won. I mean, that's all I'm saying.
Well, congrats. Congrats on a bet that we nixed because we didn't set up the terms. I found a really good Twitter handle.
Yep.
That you can get all the ratings on.
So. Yeah, me too. Yeah, no, it's good. And no, you nailed it. You nailed what that audience would be. And true to form, since Caitlin Clark's been out, I haven't watched a single WNBA playoff.
Yeah. I know Nye wanted to break down links and libs.
Yeah.
But, I don't know that I
can't help you.
I think the Liberty.
No, 100%.
But the links are very good, and they were as consistent as anyone in the league during the regular season.
I think the Liberty just wants it more. They're faster. Their girls are so dang uncompetitive. Like, especially the last game with the Aces. That was a really, really good game. Aces start off fast, and then they didn't know how to finish. So.
I'm normally not a they want it more, but I do think mental factors are important. No, I'm actually backing you up because I said I thought during the off season that the Liberty got it right mentally and the Aces helped them get it right because the Aces were kind of jerks to them.
Yeah.
Jerks is not even the right word. They're very cocky. They celebrated hard.
Yep.
And the Liberty, I thought, were kind of whiny, but I think they kind of parlayed that into more confidence, and we got to get past this wall of being intimidated by the Aces. Screw them. And they were confident this year. They're badasses.
As a former athlete, I'm going to say I'm of the opinion that motivation matters a lot.
Yep.
I am of the opinion that there are clutch and unclutch players. You know, I think
intimidation can work.
Yes. I believe in all of those things. I believe in all. And maybe I was the kind of athlete that those things did factor into. And there are other athletes that can absolutely block all that stuff out. But like, I'll just say on your Golden Knights Stanley Cup run, you know, I think Jonathan Marchessault was not going to be denied. You know, he was just so motivated to get it done that year. And that motivation, you know, spread across the team that I do think that there is a factor that they wanted it more. Now, wanting it more can only jump you so much. I mean, you got to have some talent to back up the want, you know, but that wanting it more shows itself throughout the year in the way you prepare. You can't just cruise through and then want it more in one game and you haven't prepared yourself. So that's my only caveat. The wanting it more is a season long level of determination that really gets the opportunity in the playoffs to express itself. So yeah,
I don't think the Aces had that the whole season.
No, they 100%. Definitely
did. I think they had a lack of focus.
They had a very
and that's why three-peats are really hard in any sport.
It's the hangover. Like, you know what I mean? You start feeling different about yourself and confident about yourself, probably getting a lot more attention, getting invited to go out different places. It just wasn't the same.
And your off season shorter.
Yep.
You get less rest.
And then you have the Olympics.
Olympics. I bet you if you said,
although Asia came balling after that, I will give the credit to her.
She was very good. Early next year, say in training camp, if I go out and say to the Aces, to Becky Hammon, hey, are you sure your players aren't going to cut corners this year? She'll look at me and go, I'm going to blank you up. But behind the scenes, she'd be like, I hope so.
Yeah.
Because I believe from the beginning, the way she was talking,
yes,
she was worried. She's like, I'm not seeing this. They're not taking this
Becky
league
Hammon
as seriously.
Had her own drama, though. She had her own stuff going on. It was a really weird season, period.
Because she's a hard ass and doesn't filter things, and that sometimes is going to get her in trouble. I'll mention this real quick. We don't have to expound on this, but the mental part of things, I'll give you a perfect example of intimidation. Those pink frosted donuts I had to eat at the stadium last week jacked me up. I lost. I came into the contest. I did research on Mickey Sudo. That screwed me up. Then I found out a little bit before the eat-off that she wasn't going to be there. And then the contest became something different. And I could not overcome it for the first 45 seconds of the contest.
You know, I'm just going to bring this back to where we started and say that the intimidation factor tells me Padres beat the Dodgers, move on.
Oh, God. Here we go.
I
think the Padres have.
I agree with you because the Dodgers are now addressing, hey, they're doing things to annoy us. Yeah. Who cares?
Yeah. They're dancing and they're taunting
and
our
you got,
fans.
Yeah, and you got players throwing balls at our side.
Yes,
so,
I love it.
They 100, whoever, I don't even know who it is.
It happened in the game of baseball, okay?
Whoever the last guy on the Dodgers roster is, and if that was me,
yeah,
I would have, like in pregame, I would have launched. Probably from the third baseline, wherever they're, I think they're on the third base side, whatever. Yeah. Were they home? I would throw a ball like from that distance into the dugout and just go, toss me.
Oh, whatever. He threw it into the net.
No,
oh,
I know. God. But instead of being like, hey,
we're going to be intimidated. Like, we're going to intimidate you.
Like, I don't think Joe Kelly is good.
Yeah.
But Joe Kelly is a lunatic.
Yeah.
And he's like, let's do this.
Yeah,
and I actually liked early in the game with the Dodgers where, what was it, game two with Jack Flaherty, who's like, basically shut the hell up, get off the field, mother, you know, to Machado.
Yeah.
I mean, part of that's getting in the head, but you got to respond with like behavior. You can't, you know, they're making us uncomfortable. They're mocking on us.
Yeah. They're making fun of us and they're making fun of our fans and they're taunting us and they're trying to intimidate us by throwing a ball into a net while we're standing next to. It's like, shut up, dude.
Fernando
Dodgers,
Tatis.
We're drama queens. Yes. You know, I might not be an avid watcher like Justin over
no,
here.
You know, but you know your Dodgers tonight. Baseball. You know your Dodgers baseball.
Goodness.
All right. Do you want to talk a little trash on the Wolfpack? Oregon State in this six-game slate. It's been pretty interesting against the Mountain West teams.
Yeah. I'm flying up there for the game, flying right back out the same night. But I just wanted to, you know, can't lose these opportunities for an Oregon State's playing close to go see them. I'm worried about the game. Oregon State has not put a full game together of offense and defense where they played well on both sides of the ball. I think, you and I are shown the ability to score. They scored against some good teams. They should have beaten SMU. Defensively, I think that they are not, that's not their strength, but offensively is not Oregon State's strength. Now, if Oregon State can run the ball early, then I think that they will dominate the time of possession, which is their game. That's what they do. They run twice as many plays as their opponent. They hold the ball for twice as long on every single game, even you know, the game they lost to Oregon. But if they are able to run the ball and get 4 or 5 yards every carry, then Oregon State wins. If Reno can show the ability to stop the run and make them pass the ball. I don't know. Line's 4. I expected the line to be around 7.
Down to 3.5.
Yep.
And there's actually bet down. There's actually a 3 out there at minus 120.
Yep, exactly. I
favorite on the road.
I think the under is a possibility.
Golden Knights, you're going to the game. It's the opener. I'm very bullish on the Knights and the season they can have. There's a lot of people here who are like, I don't know. The odds makers aren't exactly jumping behind them. They are, well, Western Conference, they're actually tied for the 4th choice at plus 850.
Yeah.
The Cup, and I would shop this. I've heard numbers as low as 20-1 to win the Cup. The numbers I have here are 18-1.
The one
you think there's going to be, that's not a big drop-off.
No.
That means they're in the mix.
Right. The one I like is the Pacific Division at 400. It's plus 375, I think, is what last number I saw.
You get 450 at one of the books that I pulled. Edmonton minus 110, Canucks 370.
Because, I mean, all it takes is one injury in the regular season to the Canucks and I mean, I'm sorry, to the Oilers, Edmonton. And then it's just open season. Anybody could win it. I also think that the Oilers aren't thinking about division championships. They're thinking about Cup. And they're not going to be worried if they're second or third in the Pacific. They don't care where they're seated. They're talking about Cup. And so, you know, in years past, I think the division meant something to them. I don't think this is that year that means something to them. So I do think there's value on that, you know, 4.5-1 because it's not a super competitive division. Yeah, I'm not saying that the Golden Knights are way above Vancouver, but I think they're the second choice to win that division. And anything can happen to the Oilers, and for them to be a minus favorite for the division, I think there's good money on the Golden Knights there.
Now, what you said about Edmonton not caring about the regular season, I think in some ways that was the Knights the last couple of years, especially 100%. Playing fast and loose with the cap.
Yep.
And
now we got cap space
over under 97. Well, you had to do it. It was a means to an end. Over under for points on the season 97.5.
Great. So I think it's a really good number. I think it's a right really there. Good number. I have them right at the 100-point mark. So I would say the over. I think if you're under 97 now with the 32-team league, you're not in the playoffs. So the question is, do you think they're a playoff team or not? Because the last 2 years since they've expanded, 97 does not get you in. So are they a playoff team? If you think yes, bet the over.
Yes, to make the playoffs is minus 300.
Yep. So there's value there, right?
On
the over.
Okay.
Right? Because if you think they're a
playoff
team,
that's a better bet.
You need 97 to get in. So you go the over, you're getting a better value on your money.
Nice here, Justin. It's Cofield. Last couple minutes. Have you been watching UNLV football?
Yeah, I watched the whole game.
Okay. Tough what do you, call what do you think from end. Here? That's a I brand those games. And I don't think this term's right for the rest of the, for the Power Four, but in this spot where, you know, you have to be about perfect, those games can lead to more rough times. Call them dream killers, dream crushers.
Yep.
How do you react to the dream crusher?
Yeah, that's the question. I mean, last year they were winning all of these ones that were one or two play away from going the other way. They always pulled those out. You were talking about this at the beginning of the season. You're like, I don't know, man. You know, the Air Force game, there's several games that could have gone either way. One play made the difference.
Vanderbilt last year?
Yep, Vanderbilt. I will say this. It was a heartbreaker with that call at the end there with the roughing the passer. But my opinion, and I think I'm pretty unbiased with UNLV, is I thought Syracuse was the better team overall at the end of the day. But I thought UNLV should have won the game. Like that, Syracuse had the more complete team outside of two block kicks, you know, which is part of their game.
Part of their game. And we said it going in. That special Syracuse has some trouble on special teams, and these guys are really good at it.
Yes, they are really good at it. And watching Ricky White get in, dude, that's amazing, dude. Yeah, I'm such a fan of Ricky White, and I'm so happy for him about the whole Sluka situation because he wasn't getting the ball with Sluka. And now he is Ricky White again, and so I'm really happy for him. I just love his mentality that he's out there on special teams and making an impact and, like, playing them well. You know, I think that's got to help his draft stock. You know, I don't think he's, a first rounder, but I got to imagine he's, you know, in that second to fourth range.
He's going to be on a football team in the NFL just because of the special teams. And the crazy thing is, because they have a great coach, he's showing everyone what a great player can do if they really care about special teams. Now, other guys that we didn't know were going to be good special teams players, they're rising up.
Yeah.
So he's a complete player. He's a great story. Justin, we appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. 5 o'clock hour is coming back. Enjoy the game tonight as VGK opens up.